Hello and welcome to the Record Swappers. My name is Gabriel and I'm joined always by Viking. Say hello, Viking.
I don't get to say my own name today.
Today we're recording from our respective setups yet again, but hopefully with a little better audio quality, I hope. We found some microphones collecting dust somewhere, so we'll try it out to see how it sounds, right, Viking?
Yeah, it will be fine.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Also, I'm down with the sickness. So.
Yeah, this time you're the one with the scratchy and coffee, and I'm actually, if I did have coronavirus or whatever I had, I'm well now, and now you're not well. We're going in and out. We're passing each other. We can't even have quarantine time together now.
No.
That's a shame. Yeah.
But I have my tea in my hand.
That's good.
Some water. So I'm hopefully I will get through.
Yeah,
this.
And I give you some lozenges. And I have extra at home. So yeah, if you need anything, I'll drop packages to you now instead of you dropping packages to me like we did. So yeah,
you've been very helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome. Is there anything you want to talk about today except just the state of the world and your sickness?
No, speaking of done with the sickness, I watched a glorious movie yesterday.
Yeah, which one?
I think it was yesterday. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, trust me, I understand.
Starting and ending.
I understand.
I saw the movie Queen of Dam.
Was it good?
And, it was. That was my cat starting Spotify on my computer.
Okay, that's.
I'm sorry.
Super cool. I don't know how she did that, but it's awesome.
I will shut down Spotify now. It's a horrible, horrible movie. It's kind of continuation.
Yeah, yes, continuation.
Nailed it. Of the Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, and that awesome Tom Cruise movie with Kirsten Dunst.
Yes, but this movie is horrible, it's from a fascinating time where you could score a whole movie with only new metal.
That sounds amazing.
The whole score of the movie is new metal. It's kind of like, the Jet Li movie,
yeah.
The One.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Is the same thing, is from the same era, like somewhere like 2001 to 2005-6, there you could score a movie with all the new.
Nice.
And it's fascinating.
That sounds awesome. I haven't done much. I've gotten well and I've been just watching TV shows and stuff. I've been starting to watch Avatar The Last Airbender again, but now I'm forcing my girlfriend to watch it with me. We're halfway through season one and it's awesome so far. Yeah, you'll get forced on that to Viking in the future. Because you've never seen it somehow.
Well, I've seen parts
of it. That's not the same thing. We'll get to that in our own personal lives. But today we're gonna get on with the actual episode, right? We did a bonus episode last time, which was Viking's idea, as you all know, because you listen to all episodes. And we said in that one and the one before that we're going to do Blues Brothers Made in America. So we're going to, I guess, if you have nothing else to update us about the world and stuff like that, I guess we'll go into the album, maybe, and just talk about everything.
That's
fine. Sounds like a good idea. So, like I said, the album is Made in America by the Blues Brothers, and we're going to talk about them, but I want to know your first impressions about the Blues Brothers, Viking, and this album, so in that order. what your first impressions was.
The movie?
No, no. Or... I mean, like, the first impressions of the Blues Brothers and the, this album.
The characters. And,
the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, so what are your first impressions?
You know they aren't real, right?
Yeah, they're the Blues Brothers. What, are you saying that Spinal Tap isn't real?
Well, I hate to break it.
Spice Girls aren't real? They were also in that movie, and then they became amazing, you know, an awesome pop group together.
No, but yeah, the Blues Brothers are a fun group with some fun covers, I would say.
Yeah.
Have they actually, they haven't done, actually done
no.
a single, like, own song. They only do
yeah,
covers,
they only
right?
do covers. As far as I know, they haven't done any original. Yeah.
But yeah.
What's your first impression? Like, can you remember seeing anything about the Blues Brothers? Of course not this album, probably, but like the Blues Brothers themselves.
I remember seeing or like renting a Blues Brother 2000 when it came out. So I guess that's the year 2000.
I actually don't know 2000? Because I'm gonna Google that now. I saw somebody say 98 or something, but it's probably, you know, 2000s. Let's see, Blues Brothers 2000, 98. It came out 98.
Okay, 98. Yeah. Okay, so in 1998, I rented that movie, yeah, or
because,
maybe it was 1999.
I'll come to some fun facts about how I found out that it came out in 98 and not 2000, but it's for the 2000s. I remember seeing both movies. The first one first, of course.
The thing was, I saw 2000 and I didn't understand.
Oh, yeah, that's...
I hadn't seen the first
very
one.
Very understandable. But you can also see the first one and then the second one and kind of not understand anything. Like, it's really weird. And
yeah, but like, I didn't, because as I remember, it's like the second one is so like self-referential.
Yeah.
So like all the jokes are based on you seeing
yeah,
the first
I
one.
Agree.
So
I myself, I just remember growing up watching the first one that came out in the 80s. And then seeing the other one, and that's my first impression from a young age, just already knowing about, just growing up watching this movie, the first movie. So yeah, those are our first impressions. So let's talk about who are the Blues Brothers, a little Viking. Sit down, and I will tell you a story.
Okay. We just... curl up into ball here and sleep
yeah.
for a while.
No, but the Blues Brothers are, of course, they're characters, like Viking said early on. They're characters created by Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi for a musical sketch on Saturday Night Live. Belushi plays a character called Joliet Jake Blues. I could say this yesterday, but now I can't say it. Joliet, Jake Blues, and Aykroyd plays Elwood Blues. And how they started was, like I said, it was Steve Martin had a joke called King Tut, a joke song thing, and he was playing, I think, in the LA Amphitheater or something, or somebody, someplace, and he needed like an act for it, and he was also gonna be in SNL at the time, and like almost the same time, and he needed a musical act, and somehow the Blues Brothers is how like that came on, and then that sketch came on Saturday Night Live, like I said. When it comes to their musical group, except for Jake Blues and Elwood Blues, who's Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, respectively, it was formed by the help of Paul Schaefer. Have you heard of Paul Schaefer before, Viking?
Yes.
Yeah, he's...
I know.
Yeah, he's... if you just say a bald guy with like purple glasses playing a piano, he's in the second Blues Brothers movie. He was like the piano guy for David Letterman. And also he played at Saturday Night Live, and he helped Aykroyd and Belushi assemble a band from SNL band members, guitarist Steve Cropper, bassist Donald Duck Dung, and then the book that came from the, and there were from Booker T and the MGs, and a lot of other just hit musicians, and that was the early days of the band. I found out also that I never knew like why blues, like why the Blues Brothers, right? Did you ever think about that yourself? Like, why did they not be the Rock Brothers or like the Punk Brothers?
Well, they kind of play like the rock and roll.
Yeah, they had.
So I always kind of figured like they have the blues back.
Yeah, in their real life, actually, Aykroyd, Dan Aykroyd's from, he's from Canada, and when he was growing up, he went to a place called the Le Hibou. And he heard musicians like James Cotton, Otis Spann, Pinetop Perkins, and Muddy Waters. And actually, Dan Aykroyd, he jammed with Muddy Waters because his drummer, Muddy Waters' drummer, left the drum kit. And Muddy Waters said, "Anybody out there plays drums? I don't have a drummer." And he just walked on stage and started playing a song. And he's quoted by saying, Aykroyd quoted saying that Muddy said, "Keep that beat going, you make Muddy feel good." Which is kind of fun. And when it comes to Belushi, he actually didn't grow, he didn't come from a blues background like Aykroyd. He actually, he just had that normal rock and roll, you know, and he said it started to bore him and he hated disco, so he wanted to go somewhere else. And he hadn't heard much blues, but he got recommended from people. And then he couldn't just like stop playing blues. He bought hundreds of records and singles and just, he says, "I walked around playing that shit all the time." And then I knew Danny played the harp in Canada and I always could sing. So we created the Blues Brothers. So it's not really that much than just like, you know, Belushi wanted to get, he found a love for blues and wanted to get that love out into the world, basically. It's kind of how it happened.
Yeah.
When it comes to their formation. But then later, it actually also spawned a movie called The Blues Brothers, which we watched, right, Viking?
Yeah, we watched it for the
episode. We watched it together through the internet. Can you?
It was a fun movie.
It was fun. There was a lot of jokes that I forgot. And I found out a lot of fun facts about the movie that I didn't know before that we're going to talk about. But when it comes to the movie and how they actually got also their name, the Blues Brothers, it was Howard Shore. Do you know who Howard Shore is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm blanking. I know the name, but
he's like, a famous composer for movies like Lord of the Rings is one of them. He's he's done more famous movies than that, of course, but that's one of the most famous, like famous, of course. But he was the musical director for Saturday Night Live at the time, actually, which I didn't know at all. So he told them like the name Blues Brothers was his idea. And then when it comes to the backstory that the characters have in the movie, but also in real life, like for the Saturday Night Live sketches and everything, was the backstory of two blood brothers, Jake and Elwood, were created by Aykroyd. So for everybody who doesn't know what the movie is, I'll just sum it up in this little sentence. It's a movie that came out that was directed by John Landis, and it had epic car chases and had artists like Aretha Franklin, James Brown, Cab Calloway, Ray Charles, John Lee Hooker, and many more. And the story is two brothers growing up in an orphanage, learning the blues from a janitor named Curtis, and they sealed their brotherhood by cutting their middle fingers with a steel string that came from Elmore James. And they grew up in this orphanage, later got into prison, one of them, and then they need to get some money to save the orphanage. And that's basically the movie. Which,
Sums it up.
I mean, 50% of the movie is basically just car chases. They had the most destroyed cars at one point of time in all movies, so that's kind of fun. When it comes to some fun facts I found, I found some that were about like the Blues Brothers in general. So I just want to talk about this, that in 1978 they created the first movie, came out 1980, of course, just like this album, and we'll talk more about that. But they, but they had like their show, like they were touring in 1978, the Blues Brothers. So Belushi he had his movie, Animal House out at one point. He was doing his Blues Brothers music at one point. So and he was doing SNL also at the same time. So he had one of the top like biggest movies of the week, one of the biggest television shows, and one of the biggest albums all in 1 year, like in 1978. So he was a triple threat. He did a lot, and I feel like even we who grew up with John Belushi in movies kind of forget how big he was.
Yeah, he's kind of forgotten by today's standards, but he was like really a force. Like he was like kind of like a supernova. He just exploded onto the scene,
disappeared.
And then kind of. Yeah.
But like when we watched Blues Brothers, I forgot. Like I always remember Aykroyd's things, but I always forget Belushi's. And that's no offense. I always just like the character Elwood more somehow. I don't know why, but. Like he has so much power in that movie, it's insane. And following this success of all these movies and that they did, the second movie came out in 1998. But 1 year before, they were actually planning on doing an animated sitcom with Jake and Elwood. But it was scrapped after only 8 episodes. So that. As I found out, it seems like they probably produced or were supposed to produce these 8 episodes. I don't know if there's any like recorded stuff anywhere, but it was supposed to be Peter Aykroyd and Jim Belushi, so the brothers of the two characters, real characters, actors, playing the voices in the sitcom in 97.
Yeah, that would have been
wonderful. Yeah, I mean, that would have been kind of awesome, to be honest. And the last thing I want to talk about is just the fun fact is how I found out that the Blues Brothers 2000 movie was coming out in 98. Do you know how I found that out, Viking?
Oh, you
Googled? No, I didn't Google. So I was just around looking for information. And then I found that Dan Aykroyd, James Belushi, and John Goodman performed at the Super Bowl halftime event in 1998 as a promotion event for the movie. And they were along with ZZ Top and James Brown.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I just found, and I found a little clip, and it was like a TV news reporter saying, the Blues Brothers have now broken out of prison, and they're on the way to the blah, 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 you know, stadium. I'm like, okay. So it was kind of fun. So yeah, I mean, that's all I have to say about the Blues Brothers as in their history. I don't feel like there's a lot you can say because they're a fictional group in the sense when it comes to their characters and their backstory. I mean, if you want backstory, you just watch the first movie, right, Viking?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, so for everybody who wants
to know... That's their origin story.
Yeah, it really is. So for everybody who wants to know more about the band... You just go watch the movie, which is amazing. And I mean, John Belushi is great in it. And of course, also Carrie Fisher is amazing in it. I always forget how cool she is.
Yeah. Yeah, she was She came kind of from left field. And,
yeah, she had Star Wars and that movie out at the same time, on the same day, even.
Yeah, that's...
So you could go into one hall and see Blues Brothers and see Carrie Fisher, and the other one see Star Wars with Princess Leia, which is amazing.
Yeah, but I can imagine that was a fun shoot, because she pretty much just comes in and shoots a weapon.
I love the scene where she's like painting her nails and she's reading about a C4 explosives or something. No, a flamethrower. Yeah. I love it. Like painting her nails and then like, oh, flamethrower manual. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's everything about the Blues Brothers history. Now we're going to get into the album. The Made in America album. Have you ever heard this album before, Viking?
I think you might have played it for me
sometime. I think after I bought it, when I found it in the record store, we played it at home when we were just talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not like play it, like you have to sit down, I think.
No, I haven't listened to it before we did this.
But it's the third album of the Blues Brothers. It's also a live album, like most of their album were. Because they were on the road. And this came out December 1980, the same year as the movie came out, which was in June 1980, the movie came out. So they had first the movie coming out, went on tour, and then recorded this album. So that's kind of, they were busy. Which is kind of nice.
But this was recorded off like the original, like, because like the, how many tours did they
22.
Go on? Do you know that?
22 tour dates in North America, and four of them were in.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But like.
So yeah.
Yeah, and that's all the live shows they ever did, or
for this Made in America. Yeah.
Yeah, but do you know if they did more?
No, I didn't find anything about that. I only found out those initial 22 dates. So they could have maybe done more. I don't actually know that. This was the last album they made the original, so to say, when it comes to Belushi being there, because we talked about John Belushi's brother being at the Super Bowl and in the second movie. This is the last one he did, because he died 2 years later, and we'll get a little into his death. I think you found some stuff, maybe.
Yeah, so we will get into.
Yeah, do you have anything to say about the album, because I have one last thing, but I wonder if you found anything.
Oh, not about the album itself.
So I found out one thing, and this is gonna connect a little to the songs, but I wanna talk about it here. That there's a couple of songs that we're gonna talk about, and that's Randy Newman's "Guilty," which was an album that came out, and it has the song "Guilty," and John Belushi, he wanted to sing these songs he wanted to sing "Guilty," which leads into Perry Mason's theme, the TV show theme, and "Riot" in Cell Block Number 9 to establish a narrative of guilt, trial, and sentence for the show, the live show that we're going to talk about. So when we're talking about...
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I just wanted to take that here at the top, like when we get into the songs, to think about like that narrative theme of that the characters, the Blues Brothers, like Jake Blues, which is John Belushi's character, came out of the Slammer, and in the movie they like Elwood has a lot of like not convictions, what is it, like fines and stuff and automobile troubles, and then they get chased by the police and in the movie, and this came after new movie, so there's like a narrative progress there, which I kind of liked. But he thought like, I'm gonna have these songs together. Yeah, I like that. When it comes to the Blues Brothers and all their music and albums, we also have to talk about the personnel. So we're going to start with the musicians and then go into other personnel. So for this album and live tour, they had Elwood Blues and Jake Blues. Like I said, that's Dan Aykroyd as Elwood and Belushi as Jake. But the rest of the band, I'm going to list off, on not only because they're amazing musicians, but also because they have amazing names. They're really in that blues rock era of just having amazing names. Yeah, it's a little like when we talked earlier, when we were talking about Twisted Sister, like having that amazing middle name, it kind of makes you a legend in the game. And that's like, and also in blues, I mean, it's amazing. So we have Steve the Colonel Cropper, who plays guitar. We have Donald Duck Dunn, who plays bass guitar. Murphy Murph Dunn, keyboards. He doesn't have a name, I think, but Steve Getwa Jordan, drums. Tom Bones Malone, saxophone and trombone and stuff, so horns. Lou Marini. So it's Lou Marini. It's kind of hard to say fast, who's a saxophonist. Matt Guitar Murphy, who's lead guitar. Alan Mr. Fabulous Rubin on trumpet. Tom Triple Scale Scott. So he's Tom Triple Scale Scott. And then we have Paul DeShiv Schaefer. And then we have Jeff Mironov. So those are the musicians. And I honestly just love Donald Duck Dunn. I love the alliteration. He's one of my favorites. And we also have to talk about some other special personnel, and I'm going to let Viking talk about somebody special soon. But I want to say that when we were talking on, what was the last episode, Viking, before the quiz episode? Can you remind me? On the end of Red Hot Chili Peppers, me and Viking got into a discussion of what was so special about this album a little. And then we said that there's a lot of special stuff, not only with the Blues Brothers, but behind the Blues Brothers are special people. And that we would we could dedicate the whole episode to a certain cool person. And we're going to get into who that is soon. I just want to talk that on this tour that they have, Viking, had, you know, normal people, right? You had the production manager, the assistant manager, the stage manager, right? But I just want to talk about some special people, and that's one of them is Richard Smokey Wendell. He worked security, an awesome name also. He was a former Secret Service agent for Richard Nixon, and later he became a bodyguard for musicians and movie stars. And also he was known for helping people stop doing drugs. So he was employed to help Belushi control and stop his drug use. You know, just a normal working title, right?
Yeah. And as I understand it, he succeeded.
Yeah, for a while he did.
And then Belushi said, "I'm fine now. Yeah. You can stop working for me." And then it didn't go so well. So, what do you have anything else?
No, I want you to talk about the other person with the awesome name, and that we kind of mentioned a long time last year on this podcast. A little, we found this, so this is a long time coming in a sense. What is this?
Yeah, we're building.
Do you remember what his...
This is what the season is building.
Do you remember what the person's job description was on the tour?
Oh, he's credited as a physical stress therapist.
Before you say who it is, when we first read that, didn't you and me both think that means drug dealer? That's my first thought. And I just found that was so fun. Like, physical stress therapist. So who are you? talking about Viking, that's the physical stress therapist.
It's Bill Superfoot Wallace I'm talking about. He
amazing
was
amazing name.
Or he is an American martial artist. He's called Superfoot for his awesome left leg that once clocked in a kick at 60 miles
How
per
many?
Hour. 60 miles per hour.
Oh my god. How much is that in kilometers? That's a lot.
Well, you can do the research if you want to. Continue talking. He retired undefeated as a professional. He retired undefeated in the Professional Karate Association Middleweight nice. Championship.
Viking, 60 miles per hour, 96 kilometers per hour. That's almost 100 kilometers per hour on one kick.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
That's crazy. That's incredible. Besides doing well in like the martial arts, I think he also has an undefeated record in kickboxing. Besides doing that, he was a personal trainer for both Elvis Presley and John Belushi.
You know, just the two most normal people to train.
Which is just incredible. In 1976, he suffered what many considered a career-ending injury. I think it was a leg injury. I didn't find so much about how he got injured, but I think it was in...
Maybe somebody swept the leg, just like in Karate Kid.
Yeah, exactly. Many thought he would gonna end his career, but the late Elvis Presley moved Superfoot into Greaseland and called upon a renowned acupuncturist from Los Angeles to treat his friend.
Oh, you just
He looked fine and started doing martial arts again after that.
I mean, that's kind of amazing. You know, if you ever need anybody to fix your problems, I need to call up acupuncturist and see if I can get some help with my neck.
I mean, like, when Elvis Presley gives you medical advice,
you just take it.
You just shut up and take it.
Yeah, probably. I mean, one of the other fun things to Google, and I didn't do that this time around, but last time we found information about Bill Superfoot Wallace was just typing in Bill Superfoot Wallace and Bruce Lee. That gave me so much like cool stuff to read. If anybody wants to like find some cool stuff on the internet that they didn't know, they should just Google Bill Superfoot Wallace, but also put Bruce Lee in there because people love Bruce Lee, and it's an amazing, amazing rabbit hole to go down into.
Yeah, talking about movies, he appeared in around 20 movies through the years.
Like as a stunt double?
He did this. He appeared like characters, but some were small and some were bigger. Cool. But he appeared in the movie The Protector with the Jackie Chan.
Ah, I know that movie. I recognize that name.
Yeah. And I think that's one of his biggest roles. I think he played
henchman number three. Lackey.
God damn it. No, but like you have the boss and you have the henchman, but you have something in between.
Middleman. I know what you mean. Like
no, yeah.
Evil.
It's like first hand man.
Yeah.
Isn't that like the expression first hand man?
Yeah. Oh yeah, but that's the same. That's the joke in Austin Powers. They do like number two. He's the number two.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Number two. That's
who does number two work for? I love that joke in Austin Powers.
Yes. But he also, more than being a personal trainer, being a physical stress therapist for this record, he also found John Belushi dead on March 5th, 1982.
Yeah. I remember when we first Googled, you found an FBI article about that. That's so weird.
Yeah, so apparently what he had spent his last week in a bungalow kind of on the Hollywood Sunset Strip trying to write, like, because his like career had much fame, but the last like two movies he had done then had not been as well as like Blues Brothers and Animal House. So he was starting to write and stuff, and that's why he came over. Mr. Superfoot came over because he was handing or like giving Belushi a typewriter.
That's really nice.
But as far as all know, he spent the night with a certain drug dealer and a woman called I forgot to write down her name, but
his wife.
She was a drug dealer, pretty much.
Now it sounded like you were saying his wife was a drug dealer. I know who you meant. You meant the drug dealing woman was a drug dealer, not his wife.
Exactly.
Oh, you gotta love language sometimes.
Oh my god. Oh my god. But apparently. Apparently she had given him a speedball. What's called? It's a blend of cocaine and heroin.
Sounds good.
Yes, and died of that through the night. And apparently earlier that night, both Robin Williams and Robert De Niro had been visiting him.
The two Robert
and trying to get him to go to a club, but they came in and like saw him being in the state he was, and there wasn't
just left him alone.
Yeah, kind of left.
Yeah, him alone. I mean he was a special man, Belushi. I mean they even had a cocaine budget for the Blues Brothers movie to keep people up at night, and he wasn't the only one using the drugs. Do you have anything else about Superfoot?
Oh, I found her name. It's Kathy Smith. She was an occasional backup singer, rock group, and drug dealer. And legal secretary, apparently.
Okay. Weird combination.
And she served 50 months in California state prison for injecting him with
the speedball. Interesting indeed. I want to talk a little just about a story I heard about Belushi and on the set of Blues Brothers, just to show like what kind of person he was, except for the drug use that we know him for in the movies you know him for. Do you want to hear this story before we get into the album?
Yeah, let's
go. So, a lot of the times on Blues Brothers, the movie shoot, he would just disappear, and he did this in his normal life too. But he would just disappear. Like it could be like they're taking a break, or they're like, "Oh, we're gonna shoot at night. Come back here, and then we'll shoot." and everybody would be looking for him. And Dan Aykroyd, he like went around knocking on people's doors, and then there was a couple that like saw Dan Aykroyd coming, and they just opened the door and they're like, "Oh, are you looking for John? He's in the kitchen eating a sandwich." John Belushi just went to this couple and knocked on the door and said, "Hey, can I have a glass of water and a sandwich?" And he said, that just shows you how much America loved him, because he was very well known at the time, you know, being on television and one of the biggest movies, and just being a nice guy.
Yeah.
So it really speaks to him having, like, he wasn't afraid of just doing what he wanted to do, but also being a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
So people who haven't grown up with him or don't remember him, they should check out a couple of his movies, especially this Blues Brothers, of course, and Animal House. I haven't checked out Animal House in years. I have to maybe check it out this coming week, I feel like.
Yeah, I wonder if that movie holds up.
I don't think it does, in a sense. I mean, it depends on you. If you look at through and like a looking glass, it's of its time, I think. But I think it's interesting movie, like, for its time. So yeah, that's everything we have about the Blues Brothers and their personnel, I guess. You want to get into some songs?
We can start off with the first song of their live performance,
which is Soulfinger or
/ Funky Broadway.
That's how it works. When it's a / it's not an or. Soulfinger. It's an and, actually, because it's Soulfinger and Funky Broadway, because they mix them up together. So this song is mostly like talking about the it's an intro to the night's show and who the Blues Brothers are. And I wrote down a question I have to you, but I want to hear, is there anything about the song you want to say?
Yes, I can introduce the songs by saying that Soulfinger was a single released by The Bar Case.
By who?
I forgot to write down the date. The Bar Case. B-A-R.
Yeah.
K-A-Y-S.
Okay, never heard of it.
But pretty much all this music was released around the middle and end of the 60s. Oh, okay. Frankie Broadway was a song written by Alistair Dyke Christian, who was originally recorded by his band Dyke and the Blazers in 1967.
Oh my god, that's an amazing name. Amazing.
Yes, Dyke and the Blazers.
That's cool. Especially for like the little double entendre joke, a little also. No offense for having that name. But yeah. Yeah, I didn't do any, so it's good that you did research about the song, so you can tell us more. I have a question about this song. Are you ready for it? Have you said everything? Okay, so he says a certain thing, and I want to talk about it. So he says, quote for quote, I'm going to try to do this. "It is the sound which historians in the far future might catalog under 20th century pre-light emitting diode euphoric." Right, Viking? He says that in the song.
Take your word for it.
So I wonder, what is the 20th century pre-light emitting diode euphoric? What does that mean for type of music? It feels like he's talking about like 20th century cheesy pre-light emitting diode euphoric. So I mean,
for me it sounds like he's talking about heroin, but
okay. I feel like 20th century is easy. Pre-light, that means before light, emitting diode, which is like a certain lamp, and it's euphoric. So it feels like he's just saying that the show and the historians will say that the show was pre-light, before, you know, they had the cool strålkastare, you know, cool light on euphoric. Is how it feels to me, but it's such a weird way of saying it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like, so you know the expression like the best thing since sliced bread.
No. Oh yeah, I've heard that. I just had to think.
Yeah. So I think this is kind of like he's saying like this will be the best thing until we get LED lights.
Till we get more. Till we get more effects on our show. It also feels a little like just Dan Aykroyd's Elwood character. He like in the movie, he always said a lot of weird words sometimes. It's like when he was talking about the car, the Bluesmobile, he uses like, oh, it has cop car, cop tires, cop windows. But then he can say like, it has the cubic engine, 45 milliliter up high, down low, you know, like... through the said angle, you're like, of course, Elwood, whatever you say. I feel like he just wants to say funny, weird, funny things. So yeah, there's not really a song. This is just the intro to the album, but it really gets you pumped, right?
It's instrumental.
I really like that you can hear the audience early on. They really like they let go. Yeah. It's not like, oh, we're at the beginning of the show, everybody's quiet. It's like really, no, we're just gonna start having fun.
Gets you pumped right from the start.
Yeah, I like that. You wanna get into the second song?
Who's making
love? To your old lady. While you're out making love. So we're going to talk about that question, but tell me the history of the song Viking so I can drink some water.
So Who's Making Love is a song by...
Wait, Who's Making Love?
Who's Making Love? It's a song written by Homer Banks, Betty Crutcher, Don Davis, and Raymond Jackson. Raymond Jackson. So there's four people working on this song. Worked on this song, and it was recorded by the singer Johnny Taylor. That was a very Swedish expression.
Johnny Taylor. You have to do like the Swedish chef. Meatball. IKEA. Alex.
Yes. I kind of hated this song the first time I heard it.
Really? I was just gonna say that this song had amazing guitar and
I never hated it because the music is great, but for the lyrics I was But then I like really sat down and read the lyrics.
They're so weird. They're so fun.
So weird and fun.
So the first thing is the chorus is "Who's making love to your old lady while you're out making love?" It's just a philosophical question of the times, right, Viking?
Yeah.
But did you also read the line where he's about like he's saying something about hitting his girlfriend or wife?
I have
to find it now. Why did you hate the song? Like, is it because it's? When it comes to the lyrics.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like very like. I don't know. I can't really.
Misogynistic, maybe.
Maybe. Thinking that a woman is made to be beat and treated so bad.
Yeah, that's the one.
Is that what you're thinking about?
Such a, like, so weird.
But it's actually, like, a positive, like, it's saying, think that a woman is made to be beat on and treated so bad. Oh, fellas, let me ask you something. I'm sure that you never even dreamed of.
Who's making love to your old lady while you're out making love? I mean,
it's a weird song.
Viking, only the scholars, only Socrates and Plato can answer this philosophical question.
Yeah, I mean, like, the chorus for me is really funny, and I mean, like, that's why I would listen to the song again.
Nice. Yeah, the chorus is good, and the backup singing also in the songs is good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You want to get to "Do You Love Me"?
Do you love me, Viking? Do you love me? Yeah.
Nay.
That's the wrong song. So, do you love me / mother popcorn? You got to have a mother for me. That's the title. So, Do You Love Me is a 1962 hit single recorded by the Contour.
Yeah. Tell me more.
It's kind of funny because this song has what you call a false ending.
Really?
And did you notice they did it in the live performance?
What's a false ending? I don't.
False ending is when you end the song, but it's not really over. And you continue the song.
Do you love?
And they do it in the.
I thought that was just kind of funny.
Because it kind of stop like at some point and then pick it up and start playing.
I didn't think about that at all, actually.
But the other part of this song that doesn't really stand out that much, but it's a James Brown song.
Yay! I was just going to say that I love the James Brown feeling because of the owls. Oh, that's going to spike the mic. Like, ow!
Yeah.
We can't do it, so we shouldn't try.
But I don't think he uses any lyrics from this song.
It's more the song.
It kind of goes into the riff for a little while. But
yeah.
Do You Love Me, I think, is a classic.
I really like the piano and the horns. It's a classic blues standard, I feel like. And the backup singing was really good, too. Do you have anything else to say about Do You Love Me? Or else I need to present the next song. Okay, yeah. So the next song is going to be a little song. Are you done with Do You Love Me?
Yeah, go.
So I'm going to do a little joke here. So the next song is Guilty. And I'm going to start it off by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, at this point in our podcast, we would like to become increasingly intimate with you. Hey, take a look at this. Viking is taking off his hoodie. Now, when we normally record, he doesn't take off his hoodie. But he's taking off for you people.
I usually go to bed.
Yeah, so you got the joke. So the joke is
that
Elwood Blues is talking about his brother gonna slow down the set and become increasingly intimate with you. And he's gonna sing a love song, like this song, and become more exposing his true self. And then he's taking off his jacket. When he goes to bed, when I put this guy to bed, he doesn't take off his jacket, but he's taking off for you people. I always love how he says, you people.
This was the first sentence I wrote for the notes about this song. It was great.
Yeah, really good. I mean, it's also a thing because they talk about in the Blues Brothers movie, like their get-up is very old school, and then them having always the same clothes. And I'm expecting people to come to their shows, but hey, they came and he took off his jacket for them. I really like that joke. When I could put this guy to bed, and in the movie he technically did put him to bed because he gave him the cover.
Oh yeah,
he was sleeping in the bed. What can you tell me about this song?
Yes, it's a song made by Randy Newman.
You got a friend in me, Randy Newman.
Yes, and that kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, mine too. When I saw that, like I said at the top, he wanted to do the Guilty, and I read Randy Newman's Guilty. I'm like, wait, what? The same Randy Newman?
So I've written down here, since the 80s.
Yeah.
Newman has worked mostly as a film composer.
Yeah,
he's done all the 4 Toy Story movies.
Yes,
A Bug's Life, Monsters Inc., Cars.
Cars 2. I hope not.
He's done he doesn't Cars 2. The Princess and Frog.
Oh,
And he also done.
I missed that one.
He done like. Live action movies like Ragtime, Pleasantville.
Oh my Meet god, the yes, Parents, Pleasantville. Amazing.
Seabiscuit and other stuff. And he has received 22 Academy Awards nominations.
Oh my god.
22 Academy Awards.
For his
Awards
music.
Nominations.
Only, oh my god.
For Best Original Score and Best Original Song.
That's kind of crazy. Like his career, he just took a switch from doing his own music and publishing his own music to just making this. And his career is probably more well known now as a composer than anything else he was.
Also, he won twice for the best original score.
Toy Story?
Toy Story. I don't know what the other one is.
Yeah.
Also, it's kind of funny because apparently he has a family that's into movies and does movies, and together, the whole Newman's family has 92 nominations and has the most nominated, like for extended family.
That's kind of cool. Kind of cool, but also weird because there's like such big other families, like which is crazy. But that's really cool. I really like this song, especially because it's coming from John Belushi or Jake Blues.
It's kind of a change of pace.
Yeah, but also not only that, when it comes to like the singing of the song, it really feels like.
Yeah,
I can understand why he wanted to pick it, because it feels like he's not only talking about that theme of that we were talking earlier about, you know, with you have the guilt, the trial, and the sentence that's going to come in the 3 songs, but also that he's himself is talking about his own life and experience somewhat, like his connection to his wife when he talks about love, but also the struggles with drugs. And the connection there between his wife and his drug struggle. I mean, they weren't married for a long time before they passed away. I've read somewhere like they were married for 2 or 3 years, like when he was 1980 or something. So they hadn't been married long when he died either.
Yeah.
They were, but they had known each other since like high school or something, I feel, and stuff like that. So they were. Long they had been together a long time, but still not married long. But I can really get the emotion from him, and I can understand when he's saying like he's gonna get more intimate with the crowd, because it feels like he's really exposing himself as a person and not the character anymore.
Yeah, especially like when the whole Kane bit and that stuff kind of shows. It bleeds through.
Yeah, so really. And the piano was really good too. And Randy Newman, of course, when it comes to composing with piano, understandable. And the piano playing on this song was really good.
Yeah. And many people have done covers of this song. I probably found like there's like 20 people or something that covered this song. But
yeah, even found a Swedish.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Stop busting my ball.
No, I'm just saying that was awesome. I was so surprised.
So I picked two of the most well-known covers. The first was the cover machine of them all, Joe Cocker. You probably have covered every song on this plan. And the other one is the Swedish artist Ulf Lundell, who made a Swedish version of this song, which you mentioned and ruined.
I'm sorry. I was so surprised.
Yes. So that's all the information. Okay. I have.
Nice. You want to get into the Perry Mason theme, the number 5th song, that that gives the feeling of trial. So what is Perry Mason, first and foremost?
Perry Mason was an American legal drama that aired between 1957 and 1966, and also between like 1982, I think, and 1993. They came out like probably like 20 TV directed TV movies.
Yeah, and
with Perry Mason
through the Hallmark Channel, I feel.
Yes,
I love Hallmark.
Yes, I watched a half of the second movie, which was very interesting. Interesting.
But it's a really recognizable theme. I mean, I never heard of the TV show, like, at least not how do you say it, cognitively? I can't say it like knowingly. I didn't think about me recognizing the theme, but then when you hear it, like, yeah, I know this, but I can't remember what show it is from or what's where it's from. It's really a famous war take on everything.
Yeah, but I think this song has a very nice, like, it almost has this jazzy big band kind of feel. And I almost like thought like it could almost like fit on like a score of an old
Bond. Yeah, probably could. I mean, and a lot of noir settings I feel like could fit very well because it's from that. But everything that's even trying to be that today could really work. There was a
It's kind of what it reminded me of.
There's a certain thing he talks about, because this is another song where Elwood, Dan Aykroyd, talks somewhat. And he says that him and his brother are like, it's hard to find legal help these days, because his brother is guilty. And it's because they're recidivists. It's very hard to say. Recidivists. It's very hard to say, but it means it's someone who committed a crime in the past and has begun to commit crimes again. Example, like people who come out of prison, you know, there's like, they have nowhere else to go, so they start doing crimes again. That's a recidivist. It's a very hard word to say. But Dan Aykroyd says it easily. I also love like his mumble singing he does in this song. That's really funny. There was a couple of names in the song. Do you know who the names are?
No, I didn't pick up
on that. So he sings like, now I'm just going to say, the cop was a trag. The bully was something. I can't remember the names. But these, the secretary was Adela. These are all names to characters in the movie. So, like, there's a cop actually named Trag in his last name. There's a Murphy that's a lawyer, and there's a secretary called Della. So they're all the names he says in the song he's singing is character names to the TV show. So yeah, there you go. You want to get into the number 6 song?
Yes, very much, because this is a blast of a song. It's a Riot in Cell Block Number 9. And it's a song that's composed by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller in 1954. So this is about the oldest song on this record. And was first recorded by the Robins of the same year. I mostly know this song by the cover of the awesome One Day Jackson.
What did you say?
Wanda Jackson.
Yeah, I feel like I recognize that name.
Was a country blues singer.
Sorry.
Who has done a fantastic cover of this song. But this is also a great cover of this song.
Yeah, real good.
It employs a Muddy Waters stop time riff.
Yeah, that's very famous.
Like the whole like do like
and Viking is saying his troubles today. It's about the coronavirus.
Sick as a dog.
And he's gonna tell you how he got well. Yeah, that it's the most famous. I feel like every person even hasn't listened to the blues. It's in probably any movie, like when you have to have blues and you don't know what to do. That's the thing you're gonna get. Like a lot of people know that. I feel also like people who've heard John Lee Hooker also, he has that in some song. That like you know, boom boom pow or boom boom. He has that time thingy too.
Time
riff, thanks. I was gonna say signature almost.
I only written this is a fantastic song and a fantastic cover.
I said just classic blues standard, amazing backup singing, really good horns, and like just amazing. I mean, it's a blues song. It's 100% like, even if it's got some other elements, you really feel the blues out of this song.
Yeah. Let's go into the kitchen.
Yeah, let's go into the kitchen and eat something that I like, but other people don't like. Green Onions. Which is an awesome musical song. Tell me about the history, Viking. Yeah, the history that he doesn't mention himself.
It's an instrumental composition recorded in 1962 by Booker T and the MGs.
And you know who's from Booker T and the MGs?
Booker T?
Yeah, of course, but also Steve the Colonel Cropper and Donald Duck Dunn have been in Booker T and the MGs. So it's kind of fun that... Also when he mentions them, the crowd goes really wild because they're a big big thing, but also two of the musicians from that band are in their band. So that's kind of cool.
Nice. It's a song that's been described as one of the most popular instrumental rock and soul songs ever.
I mean, it's really
and I can
amazing.
Agree with that. I recognize the riff when I heard it.
Yeah, I think most people do.
I mean, like, I would maybe say Mr. Lou maybe have taken the crown from that one, but
yeah,
you know Mr. Lou, right?
Mr. Lou.
Mr. Lou.
No, who is that?
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
You know the song?
No, I can't remember right now. I haven't seen Pulp Fiction in a long.
I know the song. Everybody knows the song.
But
anyways, this is definitely a class.
Yeah, and especially how they do it in the live show is amazing. So, and I want to talk about that a little right now. We talked a little about the joke that he's talking a lot about North America and that it's the stronghold in this day and age, and a lot about their great music and stuff. And so we were joking that this is a Make America Great Again song, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
But actually, I would say...
not the song itself, but his speech.
Yeah, of course, I'm sorry. The speech he's making within the song. But actually, I think like the speech he's giving is more like a America is Great Right Now speech, because it's in 1980, which is around the height of the Cold War. So it's very understandable naturalism. I mean, America is very known for like being loving their country and being proud of that, and especially in the Soviet Union time and Cold War time. You can understand his speech somewhat, right?
I understand.
It is the stronghold. There's a couple of things he mentions.
I love them jeans. Yeah.
He mentions the Monroe Doctrine. Do you know what it is, Viking? Or do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, well, you can explain it. No.
Yeah, I kind of recognize it too. I'm sorry, I just hit the mic. I'm sorry, Mike. Everybody who's out there and who's named Mike, I'm sorry. So the Monroe Doctrine was basically a declaration from President Monroe that stated European involvement in the New World was unacceptable and that the United States would not intervene in conflicts between European states. And that's like a long, long time. But the USA did the same around the Cold War for the Latin American countries when the spread of the Soviet Union happened. It's kind of seen with Cuba and the whole thing there and Colombia and stuff like that too. But a lot with how Cuba got their country and the rebellions in a lot of the Latin American countries that the America didn't... didn't jump in and intervene is because it's between those states, so they're not supposed to be there, even though they technically did because there's a whole stuff between, but that was the big point. He also mentions the Marshall Plan. Do you know what that is, Viking, or do you want me to educate you? So the Marshall Plan was an American initiative to financially contribute to the reconstruction of Europe after the Second World War. It was named after a Secretary of State. So basically he says, take that archaic Monroe Doctrine and throw it out and let's stay home another 10 years. And that Marshall Plan that makes us police force the world, you know, throw that out also. And that's how they put their foot in, even though with money they put their foot in and like, oh, we're going to help you and stuff. But it makes them also get to go around the world. So yeah, it's an amazing speech. And I also love that he says he starts this speech by saying the All-Star Blues Brothers musicians will come out soon or something. And like, it's great. He's just calling the band All-Stars, but because they really are. It's probably the highlight of the album for me personally. We're gonna get into our favorites soon. Let's get into the next song, Viking.
I ain't got you.
No, because you're. How long is your far? 100 meters? We don't live that far from each other, but I ain't got you here. I ain't got you. Tell me about the song.
Yeah. It's a song by Calvin Carter and recorded both by Jimmy Reed and Billy Boy Arnold in 1955 and later covered by the Yardbirds in 1964.
You say the last one?
The Yardbirds, you know.
Yeah, I recognize that name.
Yeah. The classic. I think they're British. You really should know.
I feel that. Yeah, the Yardbirds. I recognize. Yeah, keep on.
I think they came up in the whole British invasion.
Yeah, I recognize
but
them.
Yeah. I like this song. I don't have that much more to say about it. So tell me yours.
So I Ain't Got You. I feel like the song musically is very cheap. It's very easy. But there's a lyric in it I really like, and it's very suited for these corona quarantine times. The lyric is, I'm all dressed up and with no place to go. It really suits these quarantine times, which I found was funny. Tell me.
Yeah, it just reminded me, I watched a live stream the other day from a guy who played the video game Rock Band, and he had made a coronavirus quarantine list of songs, and nice. They were "School's Out."
That's cool. That's really fun.
"School's Out" for forever brings another meaning to the the world right now.
Forever.
What other like the Police song, don't stand so close to me nice. Was one of them, Strange nice. Times.
That's really fun. I've seen a lot of playlists on Spotify, but that's even smarter and cooler, honestly.
Yeah, it was just a lot of like kind of puns on like people staying away.
Without
from
puns, we don't survive. There's one more thing from I Ain't Got You song that I wanted to take up because I didn't know this. It's not that important, but he mentions Fan Fox, who was a former stripper who was known for her involvement in the 1974 sex scandal surrounding Arkansas Congressman Wilbur Mills, which he also mentions as in the song. Mm-hmm. And I don't know like if that's in the original song. That's a Blues Brothers thing they put on purpose. So, but I just wanted to mention that because I didn't know if it was an original thing, like the Fan Fox Wilbur Mills thing.
Yeah,
and I kind of wanted to delve into more about like that, and then I checked out Wilbur Mills Wikipedia. It was really long, so I'm like, I'll maybe take this another day and see what's it about. So yeah, that was everything I got about that song. Let's start from the bottom, and now we're here.
From the bottom.
We started from the bottom. Now we're here. Yeah, from the bottom. From the bottom.
It's a song by Sonny Boy Williamson II.
The second?
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I haven't written down the story, but I can take it from here. Do you think his father was called Sonny Boy Williamson? No. There were like a harmonica player, I think, that was also called Sonny Boy Williamson. And they so he decided to go on and call him Sonny Boy Williamson the second. That's pretty much the whole story. I thought it was quite fun.
Sonny Boy Williamson. I recognize this name. I feel like I've heard him side probably. Yeah. That's kind of funny story though, in a sense.
It's also kind of funny, like he being
his father was not his. I am your father. This is also another just chill song, but the horns are amazing, of course.
Yeah. It starts out kind of like an instrumental song and then goes into singing.
It
has a nice long intro.
Good backup singing or like calm response. So yeah, you want to
You should know who made this song.
Yeah, I know. I went down a Google hole. So yeah, it's Wayne Cochran.
Oh, but I mean, like, he tells you in this
yeah,
song.
Yeah, I know. I know he tells me. So tell me about him telling me when you're telling me about him telling me about the song.
Actually, all the information I have, because I didn't find much about this, because this song wasn't on like Wikipedia or anything. So, all I have is this is a song by Wayne Cochran.
Which is Going Back to Miami. I like this song. I went down a little rabbit hole of like Wayne Cochran because I'm like, I recognize this name so much, but I can't remember where from. And then I Googled him and I saw his amazing hair. Have you ever seen his hair?
Yeah, it's amazing head of hair.
And he's one of those like Elvis people, like when it comes to the hair, just really categorizing the style of time when they're from. It's really good. I really like that. It was really fun. And I also like his speaking in the beginning, like you're talking about, that Elwood is talking about, like, my brother will like down by the Interstate 49 where it goes blah blah blah. My brother will now sing about that like place, Wayne Cochran's place, like, and then that's kind of fun. And they just start going into Going Back to Miami, the song, and it's really really good.
Yeah. It's a very good show.
Yeah. I mean, they really end with a banger. I mean, going back to Miami, the song is really good. The drums are good and the backup singing is amazing too. Did you notice that they end also the show with fireworks? Or at least what sounds like fireworks. I didn't find anywhere, but it sounds like fireworks at the end.
Oh, that's... maybe on like...
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's, I don't mean amazing. Like actual big fireworks, but like pyrotechnic fireworks or something. It's kind of cool, especially if you remember where we started. We started from the bottom, but now we're here. But the whole thing with him saying pre-light emitting diode euphoric. And then they have fireworks, or which are, you know, like euphoric, and they're not. So that's kind of fun in that way.
Well, kind of, that's maybe his message.
Yeah, his whole political message about the times, which is really fun. So yeah, you wanna say anything more about this particular album, or you wanna just tell me your lasting impressions of everything?
Are you gonna tell us the best song?
Oh yeah, our favorites, ever? Or slash the one we have to play. I've been forgetting that a couple of times now. I'm a bad boy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just that I forget. You know, I'm forgetful in these quarantine times. Let's see. I would probably just pick Green Onions because the speech is amazing. When we're talking, it's not a. I mean, it's a musical song. Great, but the speech makes it amazing. But.
Well,
if I would have to play a song for somebody, I would probably go Riot in Cell Block Number 9 or Going Back to Miami.
I mean, like, Riot in Cell Block Number 9
is
very close to my heart. And it's
really it's really good.
But per Mason theme, I think it's a closer.
Yeah, that's also good. I would probably just pick Green Onions because if I would put this on... I would just like, here, just listen to this weird rambling of a... and I feel like people would get hooked on, like, what is this? This is so weird. So, yeah. My lasting impressions is most like that this album is fun, upbeat, and just... I mean, it's not the most heavy blues, but it's just fun blues. And it's got some amazing backstory to it with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi and their... Blues Brothers movie and their stamp on the world. Like, Blues Brothers the movie, it sold more outside of America than it did in America. So that kind of shows you what the audience and people around the world just wanted to see. I mean, the movie is amazing and fun, but also the music. I mean, the style of music didn't really come outside a lot. I mean, especially at that time with the Cold War time and everything, maybe. It's kind of interesting. So, I mean, it was a fun ride. What's your lasting impressions?
No, it's a fun record. It's kind of quick in and out.
It's very short. It's only half an hour, around 33 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels it, and it's nice. It gets you pumped up and ready to go.
Yeah, I agree. And also the rabbit holes you can get into, like just about the background stuff with Bill Superfoot Wallace, but also all the musicians. And that's one thing that happens a lot, but especially with blues, because blues is so intertwined. It's a little slop and soul, but slop and blues, in a sense. So yeah, we're done with the album.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh my god, yes. Done. Don't you? What does that mean?
I'm sorry. I'm very low energy.
It's fine. Today. I know you're quarantined, but we're almost over. So yeah, tell me about your record.
So for next time, we're gonna go a little more into the present than we've been in a while. We're gonna go to 2010, and we're gonna listen to an album called Through Low Light and Trees by the band Smoke Fairies.
Smoke Fairies. What did you say it was called?
I was
no, just...
Okay.
tell me what it was
low
called.
Low light and through... trees.
Yeah, I want to see how it looks. Is that too wrong of me? Okay, I see it. I found it.
It's a nice album cover.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at now.
It's an interesting. It's a debut album of the band.
Debut?
In my
debut
opinion,
album?
Yeah, it's a debut. My thoughts on it is that they never quite lived up to the debut album, so it's be interesting to see.
I'll see. I've never heard about this band, so it's gonna be interesting. Listen to it and.
Yeah.
See what they think. What kind of genre are they?
Kind of indie pop.
So
rock,
in my wheelhouse, basically. Should be.
Yeah, it's in your wheelhouse.
So
it's really like I wouldn't say ambient, but it has it's very atmospheric. That's the word I'm searching.
Yeah, sounds good. Smoke fairies through. Low light and trees. We'll listen to that next time. We'll listen to it till the next time. That's what I meant to say. That's how words work. Let's end off with some social media. We're the Record Swappers everywhere. You can email us therecordswappers@gmail.com. And my personal Instagram is bartholomew.bell.
I'm Vinyl Gamer.
And we want to thank everybody for listening to us in quarantine times. Hope and also understanding that the quality and how everything sounds is different and such. We'll try to do our best to get it as best as possible. A couple of these episodes will have some... we have to work out some kinks, but we really want to to thank you. And stay safe
hopefully,
and take care.
Yeah, hopefully the next time we can be in the same room again.
Yeah, I hope so too.
See each other. Yeah.
I'll hopefully see you soon in real life. All the people, take care, and we'll swap at you next time.
Bye-bye.